Hello, and welcome to the daily episode of our BizNews Breakfast Briefing. We have a cracker of a show for you today with a strong political focus. The Democratic Alliance has lodged yet another criminal charge against the ANC. Michael Apple grills DA National Spokesperson Cilliers Brink on whether or not the charge will actually hold any substance this time around. And then Alec Hogg has a riveting and not-to-be-missed talk with political veteran Athol Trollope. The pair touch on the water crisis in the Eastern Cape before delving into a candid and inspiring conversation about Athol's journey from the DA to Action SA after his retirement from politics. Most refreshingly, though, Athol tells us why there is hope for political leadership in South Africa, despite the many challenges that the country faces. First off, though, it's over to Alec with the markets.
Thanks, Lucy. Good morning. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com. Muted applause this morning as we look back on Friday, where in New York, the S&P 500 index ended 1.1% higher than it started the day, and the NASDAQ composite was up by 0.9%. Well, the Americans are going to have a whole day today to consider what to do with their share prices next. It is Independence Day, so they're on holiday. The US market's being closed. You can expect most of the rest of the world will be relatively quiet. Here at home, the all-share index was actually down by 1% on Friday, but after what happened after we closed, in other words, nighttime South African time when the US was open, perhaps we'll see a little bit better news coming through to share prices on the JSE this morning. We need it. I've pulled out the top 10 for last week, and there was really only one stock that flew. That was Naspers. We remember last Monday, it feels like ancient history, but with the announcement from the Naspers process team that they would be selling Tencent shares, in other words, the big treasure chest worth $140 billion that the South African company owns, to buy back shares in Naspers and Prosus, which have been trading at massive discounts to what the treasure chest alone is worth, let alone all the other assets that are within Naspers. Well, that gave the share price of Naspers a 31% hike in the past week. But outside of that, the increases were relatively muted. Aspen did well. That was up by 6%. Kumba Iron Ore was nearly 6% higher. Harmony, 4%. Goldfields, 4%, Richmont, 4%, MTN, 3.5%, Sappi, 3%, Telkom, 2%, and that's kind of it of the top 40. So you had 9 shares in the top 40 that showed any reasonable increase. It was a pretty rough week for a number of the top 40 shares, led lower by PPC, which was off almost 10%. First Rand, 9.38% to be precise, and that's really strange to see a banking stock come under so much pressure. In fact, all the banking stocks were under pressure. And the reason for that is that when interest rates rise, which we're moving into now in the environment in South Africa, traditionally that helps the profits of banks. And as a consequence, banking shares usually increase as well. Well, this time around, it doesn't seem to be happening, or at least not just yet. Steinhoff, which is bouncing all over the place, we well know. It fell by nearly 9% to R2.47. Nedbank was down also around 8.5%. Anglo American was down 8%. Standard Bank, 7.5%. Sasol, 5%. These are big numbers when you have a look at the size of these companies. Bidvest, 4.75%. Sanlam, 4.75%. And closing off the top 10 losers of the past week, Remgrow, that was off by 4.6%. So a pretty ugly week for the JSE, even though the local stock market hasn't done quite as badly as the markets elsewhere in the world, especially not as badly as in the United States. Bitcoin at the moment is trading about $1,000 down from where it started the day on Friday. So you can expect the Geltech basket to come under a bit of pressure again today. That finished level pegging on Friday. It's at R319.63 at the moment. Bitcoin, incidentally, is at 19,096. Watch out, Vinnie Lingen says, if it goes below 20,000, that's the technical signal for a bit of a sell-off in that. And then the gold price was up by $8 an ounce over the weekend. As the American market is closed, we can look to the Far East to get some kind of a feel of what is likely to happen to share prices today. Well, again, there it's very difficult to make any sense of it. In Japan, the Nikkei Dow index is up 0.5%. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng index is down 0.5%. So you pays your money, takes your chances. But generally, because American shares account for well over half of investable assets in all equity markets around the world, it's likely that when that market is closed, the other markets don't really do a heck of a lot. So it's wait until tomorrow night to get another strong direction on where share prices are going. But when you have a look at what's happened to stock markets in the first half of the year, it really has been a perfect storm. The markets were hammered by inflation primarily. There was the biggest sell-off in bonds in four decades. There was a plunge in tech stocks, which you have to go back to the wipeout of the NASDAQ index in the year 2000, January 2000, to get anything similar. And then there's been the implosion of cryptocurrencies. So when investors look ahead for the next 6 months, they're not yet saying that the market will rebalance. Although historically, when you have such a big sell-off, you generally have a big rebound as well. But that's at the moment only for the brave hearts.
Next up, we have Michael Apple speaking with DA National Spokesperson Celeus Brink.
I'm joined by the National Spokesperson for the Democratic Alliance, Celeus Brink. Celeus, thanks for your time. Busy day. You were at the police station. What were you doing?
So we went to lodge a criminal charge against the ANC as an organization in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. And the reason for that is we believe that the conduct of the ANC has clearly conformed to that of a criminal enterprise as it is defined in the Act. And that is an organization that continuously participates in criminal activities or unlawful acts. Now, we had already in 2019 written to the head of the prosecuting authority asking for just such an investigation to be launched. There was no official response, but the indication was, let's wait for the findings of the Zondo Commission and then we'll proceed on that basis. Well, now we've got the Zondo Commission in, the report is in, its findings confirm our view that there is certainly space to lodge and investigate such a charge against the ANC. And we went to get a case number so that we can follow up and ensure that there is accountability in this regard.
I've seen some commentators saying that the shotgun approach, going after the ANC as an organization, it's too wide. How do you respond to those who believe focused prosecutions are the way to go about this? Because somebody at Luthuli House would have signed off on using Bosasa. Nomvula Mokonyane was head of elections at the time. You know, so you mentioned Bosasa. It was investigated since 2009, and the ANC went and took its money, essentially, while it was the benefactor of large government contracts. What do you make of the comments that rather go focus? Why go so wide?
Well, you know, whether you use a shotgun or a sniper shot approach to prosecutions, bloody well just do something. We don't agree with the view that the prosecuting authority had to wait for every aspect of the Zondo Commission to be finalized. We believe that there was sufficient evidence to proceed already with prosecutions. And if the approach of the prosecuting authority is to target individuals, well, then that is its approach and it should make that determination. But it's very important for us to put on record that it wasn't just a few individuals that acted on their own. This was an organized network of criminality. Now, you mentioned Nomvula Mokonyane. You forget the big fish. He's the national chairperson of the ANC, Gwede Mantashe, who is at the very center of this Bosasa connection. And it's not only him, it's Cedric Frolic and Zwane. And all of these characters, and I think at some point it's important for the prosecuting authority to ask, what do they all have in common? Well, I mean, they all acted as political actors within the mandate of the ANC. And maybe there's something to be gained. There's some prosecutorial advantage to be gained from taking that approach. Cast your net out widely. Some of these things we know will end up with plea agreements, quite possibly, if anything is in fact done. And so if you cast the net as widely as possible, gain access to documentation, which you wouldn't have normally, it will be up to the prosecuting authority to follow a coherent strategy. But we believe it's important to place on record that this was a systemic matter. In addition to Basasa, of course, there is the policy of CADA deployment, which the Zondo Commission has now clearly described as unconstitutional and unlawful. It's no surprise. There's been case law before in the Eastern Cape where I think it was Amatole that tried to appoint a municipal manager based on the instruction of a local ANC committee, and the High Court set aside that appointment, saying this sort of an interference in constitutional and legal processes by a political party is not within the framework of the law. So it's not a surprise, but it does help the DA in our own case against CADA deployment. And I think it also strengthens the case that the ANC must face, because CADA deployment, if anything, it was a systematic attempt to subvert constitutional processes, and the ANC should have been aware of that.
Yeah, and who chaired the CADA deployment committee?
Yes.
For so many
Indeed.
Years.
President Cyril Ramaphosa, then the deputy president.
I want to quote from the affidavit that you guys have put forward to the police, and it includes an extract from Part 6, Volume 2 of the State Capture Report. And quote, the evidence shows that the ANC had accepted donations from companies that were heavily reliant on government contracts such as Basasa without investigating them. It was put to President Ramaphosa that the unlawful activities of Basasa had been the subject of media reports since at least 2009, and that it was difficult to accept that vigilant members of the ANC would not have been aware that Basasa was the recipient of large government contracts under dubious circumstances. So that's gone through to the police. But, I mean, one can understand there are only so many prosecutors. There are so many cases on their doorstep at the moment. The ID, I mean, the DA must see that there is some movement. You had the Guptas arrested in Dubai. They're currently behind bars. You've had Transnet-related arrests. You've had Vincent Smith, Angelo Agrizi. Some call him a whistleblower. Others don't believe that. But there has been some movement. Does the DA at least acknowledge that?
Certainly there has been some movement. And of course, we welcome the arrest of the Guptas. The remaining question is now, can they be extradited? Because if they can't be extradited, it's of no use. It's a symbolic gesture. So we hope they can be extradited. And we hope they stand trial for their crimes and the harm that they've done to the South African people. And of course, we have to acknowledge the successes that have been achieved. But they are underwhelming in the face of widespread evidence of state capture and corruption. I think people expected more. They expected higher level prosecutions and arrests to have taken place at this point in time. Now, where do they start? I think Zondo makes the work of the prosecuting authority much easier because he identifies the individuals. Dudu Mnyeni, Nomvula Mokonyane, Cedric Frolic, Gwede Mantashe, Jacob Zuma, clearly indicating these people should be investigated further. So they can't claim that they're absolutely overwhelmed by just this massive, the magnitude of the cases. Zondo makes clear the first and the second and the third steps that need to be taken. And we hope that the prosecuting authority has enough courage to make the tough calls that need to be made and that they have the political backing, or at least the absence of political interference when they do start their work. And so it's very important for a party such as the DA to come out and put public pressure on law enforcement bodies. We don't do it behind closed doors. We say openly, We want action to be taken on the recommendations of the Zondo Commission. If we don't do that, if we just let it slide, then, you know, the prosecuting authority might succumb to the other kind of pressure, which is just to do nothing.
And now for Alec's special interview with Athol Trollope. Please note that this is a short excerpt of the full 30-minute talk that Alec and Athol had. You can find the full episode on our BizNews Spotify and Apple Podcast channels.
Rebecca, and its water issue. That's very much in the news around the country. What's happening there? Is there any upside?
Oh, there's a tremendous upside, Alec. You know, I think the water situation in Nelson Mandela Bay is not unique. I think there are many towns and cities across the country that are facing potential day zero. What makes Nelson Mandela Bay very unique is that it has an augmentation system. Water from the Harip Dam that originally comes from the Lesotho Highlands makes its way through the Harip Dam, through a series of tunnels and canals and rivers, and ends up in Kirkwood or Addo. And then from Addo, it's pumped to Nelson Mandela Bay. So if I could just do a quick geography alignment, the western part of the city is fed by the catchment area, the dams in the catchment area. And the dams in our catchment area are in a really water-shy area, which makes it very difficult. If you have a prolonged drought, then you run out of water in those dams, as we are doing right now. The upside of that is that when it does rain in those areas, because it's very steep, the countryside is steep and rocky, you get very quick runoff. So the western side of the city is supplied by the dams in the west, and the eastern side of the city is supplied now by water from Noitgedag scheme, which is essentially Harip Dam water. And there's enough water coming from the east to service the whole city. So it's unlikely that this city will ever run out of water. Well, the Harip Dam can run out of water. We know that. It's been very close to that before. But as long as there's water in the Harip Dam, Nelson Mandela Bay will have water. The big challenge has been to complete the Noitgedag system, which is three, if not four years behind because of poor management, bad contract management, non-payment of contractors, really just a diabolical mess, and that has been overseen by the Amatole Water Board. So that system should have been completed years ago. It hasn't been.
And who lives in the West? Is this a constituency that supports the ANC and, in other words, have contributed to, well, for the rest of us, the insanity that's been going on in the politics there?
So I don't think it has any real political alignment, but the reality is that is if you have people that are incompetent, that don't do their jobs properly, and they don't set a lot of store by maintaining infrastructure, which has been the Achilles heel of the ANC government, especially unseen infrastructure. You know, I see government working, you know, sporadically on overhead power lines and some potholes and that kind of thing. But when it comes to unseen infrastructure maintenance, like sewerage and pipelines, water pipelines that are under the ground, they have been notoriously bad at doing that. And then when you neglect it long enough, you run into trouble. And the biggest trouble is in Nelson Mandela Bay, we lose up to between 36 and 40% of our water to non-revenue losses. That means either theft or leakages or poor maintenance. And I mean, that's a travesty. If we could just sort that out, we wouldn't be anywhere near day zero.
Ciao. You mentioned the DA. You were once the chairman of the federal chairman of the DA. You were the opposition leader in parliament of the DA. You were a DA member for decades, and yet you've switched. You've left the party and joined Action SA. There must have been a lot of soul searching and thought that went into that decision.
You know, I've always regarded myself primarily as a farmer, somebody who cares for the land, somebody who cares for the community I lived in. That's what defines me. And then I got drawn into politics because I came from a politically orientated family, but it was primarily to serve my community. So I've always regarded myself as a conviction politician rather than a career politician. And I had to get to a point in my career in politics where I had to make decisions. And I made those decisions based on conviction, and I had no idea what I was going to do the next day. I remember, you know, reading a book that Tony Leon wrote, about my decision. And I want to tell you, it was traumatic to leave a party with an association that long. And I didn't just simply go to another political party. I had 2 years completely out of politics. I had no idea that I would ever get involved in politics again. But I remember Tony Leon wrote this book, and John Steenhuisen said that I had quit politics and he couldn't understand why I'd quit, and that I held all the aces and Steenhuisen held a pair of twos. And I spoke to Tony Leon and I said, well, you know, essentially, I'm very pleased that I was able to do that, because that illustrates what principle is and what conviction is. It's very easy to fold a pair of twos because that's the prudent thing to do. But to fold all the aces when you hold them in your hand shows that you have lost your conviction. And I lost my conviction for many reasons, Alec, and I really don't want to launder dirty washing in public about my association with the DA. But there were two main reasons, and I've said those publicly, and I'm happy to do it again. First of all, I thought the DA treated Musi Maimane really badly and unfairly, because we went back by 1.3 percentage points in the 2019 election. And that was the first time the DA had ever gone back in an election. So he was made to take responsibility for that. And I remember saying to the federal executive that Musi's failure is our collective failure. We all elected to make him leader. And if he didn't succeed, we must take some responsibility for that. So that was the first reason. And the second reason was, you know, Helen Zille had retired from politics. She'd had a very illustrious career, a great mayor, great premier. And she said that she would never go back into politics. But the DA re-elected her back into politics. And I thought that that was very short-sighted, because she has been making more and more polarizing statements and utterances. And that's the last thing a party that wants to be an alternative government needs, is to be polarized, where one of our greatest challenges in the DA was always the fact that we were referred to as a white party and we needed to garner support from all communities. So those are the two main reasons. I said, well, if that's the direction that my party wants to go in, to scapegoat our first black leader and then to bring Helen Zille back into the leadership position, senior leadership position in the party, then my party is going in a direction that, you know, I don't align with. And essentially, the art of politics is to change people's minds. And that's what I've been doing for decades in the DA, to change people's minds. And essentially, I changed my mind, because I said, this is not the direction that I believe this party should be going in. I infamously said to Helen Zille, there's a time to go and a time to come and a time to go. And when she was elected into that position, I said, well, clearly it's my time to go. And I went painfully, but I left because I lost my conviction.
But you've not joined Herman Mashaba. How easy or difficult was it to join Action SA and the Herman Mashaba project?
You know, Alec, I never ever thought I'd belong to any other political party. But for the first time in my political lifetime, active political lifetime, I feel an extraordinary feeling of being a South African, you know. For the first time, I don't have to explain to people that, you know, I'm white, but I really have the interest of the majority of South Africans at heart and the country. I don't have to do any of that. We all come from different political parties in Action SA. We're a new political party, but we are new people. I mean, we're a group of people that have been politically reborn and that said we've had enough of where we come from. We want something new. We want to do something different. And that is essentially why it's so exciting to be in this new political organization. And I think that we can actually achieve critical mass, because you're going to need critical mass to dislodge the ANC. It doesn't help being a 10 or 15% party. It just plays right into the hands of the ANC. You need to get critical mass of political support across all communities if you're going to dislodge the ANC.
Is it in your thinking at Action SA that there will be sufficient votes from the non-ANC parties to eject the ruling party? And taking it one step further, that what we've seen happening in many of the metropolitan areas now, where you can get a coalition together that could rule effectively?
Look, Alec, there's no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what's going to happen. If you look at the 2021 election results, the ANC were brought below 50% across the board. You know, people like Kgalema Motlanthe have said that the ANC will lose power. Just about every single political analyst that you have, and we've got some good and we've got some really bad political analysts in this country, have said that the ANC will lose. And the ANC are doing everything in their power to make sure that they do that themselves. I mean, with this Eskom debacle, the president, Palapala farm gate effort, all of those kind of things. And every one of their conferences is a shambles. The ANC is tearing itself apart. So I have no doubt that people's experience of the ANC and the fact that there's ANC fatigue across all communities and that the ANC is tearing itself apart, that they will be below 50%. The question is how far below 50% they'll go, because the greatest challenge is that they might go below 50% but still be able to cobble together a really bad coalition, which will not be good for South Africa. So South Africans need the ANC to lose badly. And I mean, if I can quote Antonio Gramsci, who says the old must die before the young are born. And if you don't understand what that means in sort of farming parlance, if in a forest of trees, all the young trees bear fruit, but that fruit doesn't germinate until the old trees have died. And that's what needs to happen in South African politics. The ANC has to die before we can bring a new political dispensation to life in this country.
The skeptics or critics, I suppose, cynics rather, I suppose you could call them, are saying, but the ANC will do what other liberation parties in other parts of the continent have done and steal the election if it looks like they might lose power. Is there much credence to that thought?
Absolutely. Absolutely, there's credence to that. The ANC have stolen everything else in this country. They also have appointed some ANC-aligned people in the IEC. And there's been huge concern for decades over the fact that many of the people who are presiding officers in the IEC are school teachers who are aligned to SATU. SATU has not only destroyed education in this country, but they destroy the outcomes of elections. But, you know, the beauty about what's happening in this country now is that we're not such a homogenous political organization anymore. I mean, they're political people from new parties from everywhere. So when we have party voting agents in a voting station in a deep rural area of Ciskei or Transkei or KwaZulu-Natal, they aren't all ANC aligned. So everybody's watching each other. It's going to be very difficult to steal an election in South Africa.
And that's all from the BizNews Breakfast Briefing for today. Thank you for joining us. And if you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, and share.